Welcome to the CLT Podcast, a series all about things related to learning and teaching in higher education, brought to you by the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University. In this episode, I'll be talking with Simon Thompson from the University of Liverpool about learning environments after lockdown. Wherever you may be listening from, we hope you enjoy. Welcome, I'm Andy Bedford, an educational developer at the Centre for Learning and Teaching here at Leeds Beckett University, and I'm pleased to be talking today to Simon Thompson. Simon is the Director of the Centre for Innovation in Education at the University of Liverpool. He's formerly the Head of Digital Pedagogy here at Leeds Beckett University and is currently a Visiting Fellow. Simon's led several funded projects, including a Higher Education Funding Council for England project about next generation digital learning environments, a JISC HEA funded open education project, a Leadership Foundation supported project on one-to-one tablet devices and their implementation for learners and teachers, and a British Council supported Peruvian universities project during the pandemic, moving some of their courses online. He's presented and published his work at both national and international conferences, and he's currently doing his PhD with Lancaster University, a phenomenological study of the lived experiences of academic staff using TPAC as a curriculum development framework. I hope that I got that one across okay. Today we'll be talking about learning environments after lockdown with a bit of a focus on the teaching and learning interactions. Simon, welcome to the CLT podcast.
Thanks, Andy, and thanks for the introduction. That was very kind of you. Yeah, great.
Hopefully I didn't trip up too much on your PhD stuff there. It's a very complicated title for me.
Yeah, phenomenographic it rolls off my tongue now, you see, because I've said it so often. But yeah, phenomenographic is quite a tongue twister. And then you can get it muddled up with phenomenology as well, which is very different. So yeah, this is a phenomenographic study.
Good. Well, thank you for clearing that one up as well. So Simon, just to start off then, can you tell me what you think the interactions between teacher and learner are the most critical ones for effective teaching and learning?
Yeah, I suppose this is the question we're all asking ourselves at the moment, isn't it? As we start to maybe plan beyond the pandemic what are those kind of critical? I suppose there's two elements. What are the critical face-to-face experiences that we might want for our students? If we take the kind of the question without the face-to-face, because obviously we do have students and you do it as well at Leeds Beckett, which are entirely online. Yeah. So to say it's a requirement to have face-to-face would be wrong of us, because ultimately there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of graduates from universities around the world that have done entirely online study. Yeah. I suppose for me, the key to any kind of learning is its social connectivity. Right. And I think that's something that we've recognised all of our students, especially coming on back onto campus, have missed. And it's interesting how it's not necessarily the formal learning that is critical. I'm not saying that to kind of dismiss people's expertise, but the knowledge acquisition element is probably largely done through social interaction. Yeah. And we've probably all experienced learning ourselves where we felt the learning has been more rewarding, has been deeper, as more effective, because we've made social connections with people. Because learning in isolation is quite a lonely experience, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
I think what's critical for me is that we've already, universities have already got in place the knowledge. You know, we employ experts of knowledge. The key here is, how do we connect that with people? How do we connect that with learners? And so one of the things we'll be looking at is, how do we embrace those social educational experiences? Yeah. So that when students come back onto campus, the engagement we have with them is really meaningful, is really purposeful, and is built around active learning and social interaction, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned there as well that some courses already are completely online. But many of them are either a combination or are used to be completely face to face. And it was about a year ago now that we saw this shift in the first lockdown to completely online teaching for most as the COVID pandemic sort of struck the UK. Looking back over those 12 months then and the challenges that a lot of staff have had to face, which of these social interactions have sort of been achieved online and how have they been achieved digitally?
I think firstly we have to recognise it's actually much harder to engage in a kind of meaningful social interaction online. But the first thing I want to say is I think everyone did absolutely amazing. You know, this idea of that sudden switch, the pivot into kind of suddenly not being on campus and still maintaining some momentum around the student experience, that students were still learning and, you know, academics were still teaching. And I think that is a testament to, first of all, it's a testament to the perseverance of colleagues across the sector to make this work. But it's also a testament to our students to say, you know, this is difficult. It's difficult for everyone, but I still want to learn. Because it would have been so easy for everyone just to give up, wouldn't it?
Definitely, yeah. And as you say, both staff and students may have been used to experiencing all of their learning face to face. And so not only did a lot of staff who were used to delivering face to face have to shift to online, but also those students on those type of courses we were used to face-to-face learning had to shift to an online.
We did, and I don't think anyone would say it was the same, and maybe not even as good as. And I suppose this comes down to that question, is how do you create that social connectivity online? I think that in reality you can create and connect create some social activity, but it's inherently really difficult to do that without being physically co-located with students. I just think of, you know, even when we're running workshops for staff, if you're on campus, the kind of micro conversations that are going on during, and you'll know this, you know, working in CLT, that happen that aren't planned, that aren't part of the workshop, those kind of micro conversations that happen in those workshops, those students have those micro conversations in the classrooms, you know, during the lectures or after the lectures, or, you know, just coming into the seminar session or just leaving the seminar session. There's all these like pockets of conversations going on that enrich that learning that are much harder to replicate in an online space, because ultimately, if I'm in a Zoom meeting or a Teams meeting, whoever's speaking holds the floor, if you like. Because it's very difficult to have a little side conversation with somebody because everybody can hear it. And, you know, and even if you have breakout rooms, they're forced, aren't they? They're forcing people to go and have those side conversations. And people don't necessarily want to publicly have those conversations by putting them into chat. So I think for me, the bit that we're missing is the kind of micro, you know, level social interaction that you're able to have in a physical space that is much harder to replicate in an online space because of the very fact that whoever's speaking is going to be the dominant voice at that point in time. It's not possible for, you know, person X to be then be having a little chat with person Y, because if they start doing that, well, everybody will hear it.
Definitely. And it's very difficult, as you say, to try and have time outside of those formal teaching occasions to maybe create even more less formal social interactions between learners or between learner and teacher.
And even if you can facilitate those, again, it's not as effective as being on campus. You know, if you get five people in a room and those five people are having a conversation, the fluidity of that conversation is easier to facilitate and manage in a physical space. You know, it's harder to interject in an online environment. You know, how many times have you had that? Two people start talking at once and then somebody says, oh, no, you go first. Oh, no, you go first. There's all that kind of awkwardness around, well, who's speaking first kind of thing. And then we've got these kind of really interesting tools now appearing in this technology, like, well, everyone puts their hand up. That's what I mean, and we'll see who put their hand up first will be the first person that will get to speak. So we've kind of technology is trying to overcome some of those challenges. Yeah, and I think, you know, imagine if we would had a pandemic 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There's no way we would have been able to maintain a high quality teaching and learning experience 10 years ago. You know, the fact that we were just very, very fortunate, weren't we? The fact that the technology just happened to come online and be in place just in time for a pandemic, you know, which is a crazy thing to think that even 5 years ago, this would have been much harder to achieve.
It would have been a conference call, probably a telephone conversation of doing it and all the challenges that would have come with that.
No, so I was just going to say, I think what we have to recognise, and I think what we're starting to recognise, is that for the formal learning, we can do quite a bit of that in an online space. But for the kind of stuff where you want really active, discursive, engaged, kind of social connected learning, we really want to be getting back onto campus for that. And I think that's the bit that students are craving, and staff, is that social interaction, even the casual kind of conversations that happen as part of coming into a lecture theatre or leaving a teaching space. Those kind of important things are what we're missing.
So getting back onto the track of that then, and thinking about those interactions and the social ones before going into a formal occasion and so on, which obviously are really, really easy to achieve when you're on campus and face-to-face and in-person. But what about the digital or the online interactions then that we can use moving forwards? And what are the things, what are the practices that we can or should continue to adopt from this online digital teaching environment as we move out of lockdown and back towards more campus work?
Yeah, and I think that's the key question that, you know, I'd love to be able to give everyone the answer here, but I don't think I'm going to be able to, but I can probably give a kind of the thinking process behind what we're all trying to achieve now, isn't it? Which is really a sense of, if you, what I think is that what we've done is really, this has accelerated the use of digital tools. You know, we've pretty much had 5 or 10 years worth of educational development around digital tools, you know, trying to get academic staff on board with digital tools. This has kind of accelerated their development fivefold.
They've had no choice.
So I think we've got loads of those kind of barriers are down, and we're pushing on an open door now when, you know, our learning technologists or educational developers with digital remits are like us saying, oh, why don't you try this? People are going to go, yeah, OK, I'll try that now. Yeah. You know, so we're pushing on a much more open door. So it isn't so much about technology as being the barrier. Yeah. It is really now deciding what is going to work best in a face-to-face environment and what is going to work best in an online space. And I suppose the question is that will be very different depending on the discipline within which you teach. So I think we can all probably agree that lectures, if you take most programs, most courses have a lecture program, don't they? A lot of those could probably become online. Mm-hmm. Whether they run them as online lectures in terms of kind of synchronous 50-minute lectures, or whether they break them up into short videos and people access them asynchronously, I think maybe this is the demise of that lecture. What the demise of the lecture in terms of its frequency.
Yeah.
And I suppose what we'll all be looking to do is say the lectures that we want to have face to face are the TED Talk style lectures, where we've got preeminent professors or we've got industry specialists coming in. We can still run those remotely and online, but there is a value about bringing those people onto campus. Yeah. And a lot of that value, again, comes down to the interaction that would be available. Either pre the lecture or post the lecture. So I don't think there's going to be a rule that says no more lectures ever face to face. But I think as a whole, the idea of running lectures face to face now will have to be really thought through and to say, is this lecture worthwhile running face to face? because I think for the majority of lecture style teaching, we could probably run that online. And I think our students would probably welcome that. You know, we've seen programs where, you know, the attendance at lectures has increased dramatically because they are online.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah.
So that tells us, doesn't it? And we all know the pattern of lectures. Soon as students have been for the first 2 weeks and they realise that they don't actually need to be at lectures anymore because the academic member of staff's going to post up a recording of it, or they're going to post up the slides and they can get just as much value for it. That should tell us something, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, this whole idea that I can stand there, and I used to do this, stand there and look at 10 students and then think, well, where are the other 80? It's ridiculous they're not here. Yeah. Was really a problem for me to solve, not their problem, was it?
Yeah.
I had to reflect on that. And actually, when I reflected on that, what I did, I started producing podcasts. That was one of the very first things that brought me into educational development, was I thought, you know, these students aren't coming to my lectures.
Yeah.
How do I get my lectures out to them? So I did start doing them as podcasts. And I think as academics now, what we'll have to do is really look inwardly at ourselves and say, right, what can I do digitally? And what do the students prefer digitally? And then what can I do physically? Because I know there's value in it and I know the students are going to come.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of questions that we should be asking ourselves. So when you say, what practices should we continue to adopt from the online? I think what we should be doing is, if it's kind of informational or just kind of transactional knowledge, the kind of just acquisition kind of knowledge, then we can probably, if it's more broadcast based, that could probably be done online.
Yeah.
Whether that's synchronously like we are now, or whether that's done in a kind of set of videos or podcasts sent to students that are pre-made, I think we can probably do that. What we really want to do when we come back onto campus, I think, is, and this will kind of link back to a flipped model, if you like, where the idea is that students might use acquisition-based information prior to coming into an on-campus seminar, where in the seminar we can kind of put things into practice, have deeper discussions with students, and really explore the topics and themes that came out of that kind of acquisition of knowledge approach. So I think the practices we should probably keep is information, knowledge acquisition can be delivered in the digital domain, and the more discursive, richly interactive stuff could be focused around the physical presence.
Yeah, and so from those knowledge-based information things, it's so easy to achieve that at the minute as well, isn't it? And you were talking there before about this upskilling of staff having to really get on board with it. It's so easy over the past 12 months of the way that technology is done for staff to be able to produce online videos, podcasts, and so on and so forth, to really have lots of different creative ways as well of giving that knowledge across to the students. And as you say, then using those interactive times after that to unpick, to deepen the learning, and potentially to build some more of the social interactions into it as well, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, I think we have to recognise that producing let's say you produce 4 videos instead of 1 lecture is more time.
Yeah.
In the short term, it's going to, even if you're using the same slides and you're just speaking over those slides and you're just generating auto captions, which is kind of the bare minimum, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll talk over the slides that I'd normally use for the lecture and it will auto generate captions for me.
Mm-hmm.
That still takes additional time than bringing your USB stick into the lecture theatre, plugging it in and running the lecture for 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So we do have to recognise that. However, you can claim that time back, because the resource you produce can be used over multiple years.
Yeah.
So I think what we're encouraging colleagues to do is think, I present this lecture, and the lecture, if I'm recording these videos, I record them, and in my mind, they should be able to last me 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So you're going to be getting some time back. So it's just kind of balancing that recognition that Yes, if you're going to produce pre-recorded material, it might take you a bit of extra time now, but over the course of those 3 years, you're going to get that extra time back threefold or something like that. And I think that messaging is quite important.
Excellent.
The other thing is that the tools, like you say, are now much more accessible than they ever have been before. And this is what I mean, this perfect kind of alignment of technology just came in at the right point for the pandemic. Just seems really bizarre, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That, you know, if you think what you can do in PowerPoint now, you know, we're all familiar with PowerPoint. It's the presenter's tool.
Bread and butter, yeah.
It is, isn't it? You know, there's not many people in higher education that doesn't know how to use PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And now what you're able to do is record the video from that very easily. You're able to produce closed captions through that and use the Microsoft ecosystem, if you like, to pull all that together and make it available to students. And I think the idea of the technology has got easier to use is so important.
Yeah.
You don't have to learn the technology inside out.
Yeah.
You have to know where to go to get help. And is a lot more intuitive than it ever has been before.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of allowed staff to feel empowered to be able to get on and do this without having to call on a learning technologist every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, to actually produce the content for them. And I think students, and I think the other thing that we've a lot of staff have realized that this doesn't have to be highly polished material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of teaching that they like to see the realness of you as a person, don't they? And part of you building a relationship with students as an academic is showing a bit of yourself to them as being real. So you know, they don't mind if things aren't perfect, if you make mistakes in your slides and you know you're a bit human about it. And I think a lot of staff have realized it is okay if, in the same way, a lecture is never perfect, is it? Anybody ever run a perfect 50-minute lecture? I doubt it. You know, we've stumbled across a few words, or technology might not work for us. And students generally are kind of quite forgiving about that.
Yeah.
And so staff can feel as if they can just produce something quickly without having to go back and polish it up and all make sure there's, you know, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and all that. So I think that's helped. So I think in terms of that kind of model around those practices, what we're looking for is staff to produce more resources and then to spend more of their kind of face-to-face time as a facilitator, structuring a session and facilitating that session in a face-to-face space.
Yeah. Like,
so that they're not, what we want to avoid is them running mini lectures in seminars again. Do you see what I mean?
Because
we want to make sure that they become more of a facilitator of a student learning experience in an on-campus environment. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking through at the moment, is in trying to encourage departments to think about what those on-campus sessions look like. In things like chemistry, it's not too difficult because they'll be in labs doing practical
elements.
We'll be doing, you know, so some disciplines will easily be able to go, we have to be on campus for this. Like for things like music and things like that, they want to be on campus in a studio or in a recording space, or, you know, because that's going to be much better probably than anything they've got set up in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And then other disciplines will have to think through what they want to do. So, for example, if you take a subject like history, where a lot of the knowledge is actually available online and can be made available online, the way they want to use their on-campus experience is to really delve deeper and explore and have discussions around those topics that they're exploring. And I suppose that's why there's not going to be one answer for everybody. But the answer for me has got to be, how are you going to facilitate a student learning experience when they come back onto campus? Not how are you going to teach them?
So it sounds like that learning environment then, as we sort of move forwards and we come out of this lockdown, and there's hopefully more and more on-campus activity going on, be that practical activity or just small group activities. how is that environment going to look in the next year, in the future, beyond that, do you think?
Again, you're asking for some very strong predictions here, aren't you? What I liken it to is a bit like the high street. If you remember over the last 10, 15, 20 years, there's kind of been a demise of the high street in terms of a retail high street. Yeah. So if you go along a high street now, the retail has moved out into online, and that includes banking. If you notice how many banks have closed branches because, you know, the online banking, who needs to go into a bank or so that kind of transactional stuff anymore? You know, I can send money to you via mobile phone, you know, whereas I had to use to go into a bank. And I think what we've got to do on campus is do the same. It's difficult because people don't like that kind of change.
Yeah.
But if you take the high street now, if you go down the high street in the area where I live, our kind of high street is, I suppose it's got a bit artisan.
Right.
You know, there's a baker there.
Yeah.
And that's because the bread that they bake is more expensive, but you can't get it in the supermarket.
Yeah.
So you still go to the supermarket or do your online shop for the kind of supermarket bread. Yeah. But on a Saturday morning, when you want something a little bit special, you're going to go to your artisan bakers, aren't you? And then, you know, we've got the kind of a craft beer shop there, you know. So what, you know, boutique card shop and gift wrapping shop. And so it's not about that the campus will die.
Yeah.
It's about the campus will have to reinvent itself.
Yeah.
Be different. So if we're not using lecture theatres anymore, maybe we could use them a bit more like a cinema.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to spend a lot of money just changing the space, we could still be doing things on campus in those lecture theatres that might be more culturally and community-based activities. But even, you know, for example, the historians might say, well, you know, most of our history lectures will be delivered online, but actually we've got this film from the archives that we all want. We're going to sit and watch like we've gone to the cinema and make it more of a social occasion.
Yeah.
So we go to the cinema, then we talk about that film.
Yeah.
So this is just about a reinvention of what campus will be like. I think it will come down to this idea of increased social interactivity. Because if you look at how many coffee shops are on our high streets, the high street now is a place you don't necessarily go to shop.
No, that's it.
You go to peruse nice things, and it's almost like a farmer's market. The farmer's markets have gone into the old high street shops. And then you've got coffee shops in there where people are socializing. And anyone that says they haven't missed that aspect during lockdown is clearly lying, aren't they? Because it's the social interactivity that we've missed, that we really crave, that being able to just nip up to the coffee shop and have a coffee. And you don't even have to go with someone, but just sitting in that coffee shop with a laptop, with other people socially interacting, is kind of beneficial as well. And I think campuses will have to reinvent themselves to be places where students want to be all day, regardless of whether they've got online sessions or regardless of whether they've got face-to-face sessions. But campus will be a place because it's nicer than being in their own digs.
Yeah.
See what I mean? And I think that's what we really want to envision campuses to be like, these new kind of social hubs where people are coming because it's the better place to be. They're not coming because they have to be there or because their timetable tells them.
And it sounds like that sort of that vision of a campus becoming a more artisan sort of area is really about enhancing those social interactions and those things that they may not be able to get from the online community, that they can then still feel connected to the university, feel connected to their courses, feel connected to their peers and to their teaching staff as well.
Yeah, and I think where universities will get this right, there will be these kind of, I suppose, discipline hubs, because you can't expect everyone to go to all the same place, can you? So you're going to have, like, I suppose what you'll end up with is discipline high streets.
Right.
So that what you end up with is, you know, history as a department, the staff and students are mixing here.
Yeah.
Socially, as they're coming in and off campus for their online stuff and their on-campus stuff. And that's what you want, isn't it? Is a real sense of community around that discipline.
Yeah.
The same way where I live is just on the outskirts of Huddersfield, but it's a suburb, but it's got this own village. It feels like a village because it's got its own community. So the shops belong to that village.
Yeah.
Even though they've got kind of a Huddersfield postcode, they're very much kind of, and I see campuses working like that. Yeah. They might all be Leeds Beckett.
Yeah.
But within that, they'll have their own identity, won't they?
Definitely.
You know, yeah. The sports will have its own social hub. The languages and education, music, whatever it might be, will all have their local hubs. But there will be times where they will come to a central hub as well. And I think that's for me what will end. What a good campus I think should feel like.
Definitely one that you want to stay on campus to interact with others at. Definitely. Fantastic. Simon, thinking of our listeners then, and can you think of like a takeaway message or something that they can try or incorporate or continue to do from what we've been talking about today, from some of the discussions that we've had, for their future of interactions and their future of these places and spaces on campus digitally that they may wish to use more in the future?
I suppose takeaway message for me is that when we are on campus with students in a timetabled session, that in our mind we're thinking, is this the best use of that time? If I have an hour with these students, is that the best use of this hour? And I suppose what I would want people to be thinking is, in an hour with students on campus, I probably want to be talking very little as an academic with as a tutor with a set of students. Because to make that hour most valuable to the students, surely they should be talking to each other and we should be talking collectively.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult as an academic, isn't it, not to feel as if you've got to be teaching in terms of talking. You know, but the reality is, I think that what we've got to try and do is really encourage each other to reflect on that and say, right, how can I make sure that I become more of a listener and more of a facilitator of the experience that these students are going to have on campus with me in that hour?
Yeah.
And to really focus it around the students being active.
Yeah.
Because it will be a bit of a shift for students, because we've kind of got ourselves in a bit of a rut, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Where the students come onto campus and they, in a lot of cases, feel as if they're passive recipients of this learning, that someone's going to talk to them and give them loads of knowledge. And we as teachers have fallen into that trap of spending the 50 minutes or the hour or 2 hours in some cases teaching them. And what we want to do is kind of say, no, that's not what we want to be doing on campus. And it will be a hard habit to break, I think, because it was so easy to go back to old habits. And what it will be really good for us to do is, in the back of our minds when we're designing sessions now, is, am I teaching more than the student? Am I speaking more than the students are interacting with each other? If so, I think I need to redesign this session, because if I'm speaking, I could do that as an acquisition based piece in the online space. So let's really focus our attentions on making the on-campus experience active, participatory, and less about teaching and more about facilitation.
Fantastic. Some really insightful stuff there. Well, I hope our listeners have enjoyed this podcast today. Thank you, Simon, ever so much for your knowledge and your experience and for sharing that with our listeners around the topic and the subjects that we've been talking about today. Thank you very much, Simon.
Thanks, Andy. It's a pleasure.
To To listen to more in our podcast series, click on the subscribe button. And to keep up to date with the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University, follow us on Twitter at Leeds Beckett CLT. Thank you for tuning in.